The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Preparing the Ruins, the 2015 Annual Conference Recordings, copyright 2015. If you have purchased this recording, you may make additional copies for use by your school. You may not sell copies of the recording, nor post it on the Internet. Learn more about classical Christian education and ACCS at www.accsedu.org.
Well, good morning. We're going to go ahead and get started pretty quickly here. According to our schedule, we were supposed to be started about 5 minutes ago, so I'm going to try to get us back on track in order to have us done on schedule. So my name is Davies Owens. I'm excited to be here this morning. It's always encouraging to think about the TED Talks. The TED format is you have 18 minutes, and I guess they figured out if you can't say in 18 minutes, it's probably too much talking. So I've got about 30 of what I thought was about 50. So I'm going to move pretty quickly to get us back on track for a ending time. This morning I want to talk about something called points of excellence, and I think it's really appropriate after hearing John Mark Reynolds' comments this morning about one of our greatest tasks as classical Christian educators is to make the crooked places straight, that we have inherited this amazing tradition that is rich in things that are truly excellent. And we live in a culture that is increasingly living with really base mediocrity. And so when they see something that's beautiful and excellent, it is truly inspiring to the soul, and it's what we deal in every day. So really what my hope is when you walk out of here in just a few minutes that you'll think about places and opportunities in your school, maybe things you're already doing or maybe things you can take on that with a fairly, I think, minimal effort can become so spectacular that it immediately raises the spirits and the souls of your parents, your grandparents, and even the general community when they come to look at your school. If you think for a moment about what was it that drew you to classical Christian education, I could tell stories of what I would call more moments of excellence. Maybe it was when my wife and I, some 15 plus years ago, walked into a classical Christian school and noticed the beauty of the physical place, watched the students stand and greet us, and I thought, this is not typical education by any stretch, and I was drawn to it. Or maybe it's something that you sense, you have personally sensed in your own journey. I know for me, I was a head of school in Atlanta, Georgia, at Heritage Prep, and I went out 4 years ago to Idaho, of all places, and I walked the hallways and sat in the upper school room at the Ambrose School, and I thought, with some tears in my eyes, this upper school rhetoric program is truly amazing. And it was a moment of excellence that drew me to it. There's lots of moments of excellence, but I want to talk this morning about points of excellence, which I would define a bit more as a purposeful effort by your school that is so well executed that it attracts, inspires, and lifts the soul towards God's truth, goodness, and beauty, and makes a lasting impression. Something so monumental that it will impact not only the parents who are there and retention, which is important, but even from a development standpoint, people will say, this is amazing. I can't think how many times I've had a grandparent come to one of our points of excellence type events and say, you know, I worried about my child when they chose that little scrappy classical Christian school. I wasn't so sure about it. But after seeing what I just saw, I am convinced there's hope for our country. Christ is on the throne, and it is a good thing. And I am all behind this school now because they've encountered a point of excellence. So points of excellence attract us. They are caught and taught. They're important for our students. Students learn self-discipline and humility by being exposed to opportunities of excellence. Parents, grandparents who come and observe in our school and classrooms, they too are inspired by seeing things done incredibly well. And I think from a curricular standpoint, what a perfect match for classical Christian education is to find opportunities of excellence. And I'm going to go through some very specifics of what I'm talking about. But contests, public performances, they draw students out and it matches up to their academics. When you think about choosing points of excellence, you got to think about what is the impression? The question is, what is the impression that parents typically have of your school? And this is, I think, a hard question to ask. We work there every day. We don't often see maybe what everyone else sees when we walk through the doors. Most of our families live, I always say, through the backpacks of our kids. They see what comes out of the backpack, and that becomes the impression. That and whatever they happen to mumble happened that day in school. And what a missed opportunity to the greatness and the grandeur of what happens every day in our schools. There are so many opportunities. The theory behind this is really simple. Charlotte Mason is known to say education is an atmosphere, a discipline, and a life. And beauty makes a lasting impression. We have the privilege every year of taking our high school seniors to Europe. And when we walk through the Vatican Sistine Chapel or we go to the Raphael rooms, it's always interesting to me, specifically in the Sistine Chapel. If you've been there, it's always packed with tourists, just standing shoulder to shoulder, looking up, gasping with their mouth wide open at this beautiful, beautiful rendering from Michelangelo. And I think, how many people in here really even understand that there is a living God in heaven who gave his son? Very few people do, but they're all just drawn to the beauty and this spectacle of what's on the ceiling. Just last week, I was in Rwanda in Africa and again saw this come to life, this theory of points of excellence, where we were in a very impoverished area and we were kind of working with a school there, experimenting with some ways to bring classical Christian education even into that setting. And we had put on a little Narnia sketch, which Aslan had been killed and was brought back to life. And here are these very, very poor children, very limited in terms of what they've seen of the world. But their spirits were brought to life. There were smiles on their faces. They saw this living literature brought to life in front of them. So we know it works. So what am I talking about? How do you choose a point of excellence? First of all, unlike a moment of excellence, which could be many things, a point of excellence is something that should be visible to visitors and to parents. It should be easily seen by all. It should have obvious beauty to it. And I should say here, yes, you could argue that an amazing basketball game, and we are state finals 2 years running now, very exciting, fill the gym, lots of excitement. That's really not what I'm talking about. That's exciting, and it does put your school on the map, but it's not a point of excellence in the sense of it's attracting to obvious beauty. It should have the accountability of a performance or a contest. You'll see what I'm talking about in just a moment with that. And it should be based in an idea coming from classical Christian education, the trivium, history, and the arts. It should become a tradition. This isn't just a flash in the pan. It's something every year the community knows you for what. We're known, as I'll share in a moment, for our Christmas program every year. It's televised. People know, oh, you're the school that does that. What is it that's so spectacular that everyone knows you for it? And then I would say maybe just focus on a few things. You don't necessarily need to have a huge number of events. I think if you just start modestly at 4 to 6 per year at the most, you would be fine. Let me talk about, this is getting to the nitty gritty, 7 best practices. What is he talking about up there are these points of excellence? And I want to just make a little caveat right now. Some of you are in very small schools. When the Ambrose School started 20-some years ago, there were about 70 students in the school a few years into it. And this idea David Goodwin started talking among the staff about before I got there, how do we create opportunities that are of such excellence? And of course, the pushback is we don't have the resources, we don't have the time, we don't have the people. And yet the school, even at that very early age, found opportunities to do things that were points of excellence. The first one we began was something called exordium. The name exordium is from the Greek proton masnada. It means praise of first thing. We've been doing this for 19 years. It's basically, to most people, it would look like a chapel. Twice a month in our gym, we gather together. The K through 6 comes in for the first hour, and then the 7 through 12 for the second hour. Students come in orderly. Parents sit to the back, not in the front, which we discovered was important because parents can kind of crowd out the front. So kids are organized into the front. K through 6 program is basically an opportunity for the administrative leadership comes up. There's a time for singing the hymn of the month. There's a proverb, a kind of a call and response chanting that we do back and forth. There are 2 classes, so a grade level. We have 2 classes per grade level. We'll come and present something that they've worked on. They've put a lot of thought and effort into it, a recitation, a drama. And then there's a brief message that's given by the administration. And then at the end of that time, there's an opportunity, because it's a gathered group, to share some of the things that we're doing broader in the life of the school. 7 through 12 is similar, although there's about a 20-minute class presentation, again, done very, very well, followed by about a 15-minute presentation. So I want to show you this video. I've got a number of video clips to kind of bring this to life. So this is an example of kind of our exordium and what it looks like on a typical day or on a typical twice a month. Students are walking.
Is there any wonder the world has left so confused? There is a problem here that requires further investigation.
A rare ancient sword named Runting. The iron blade with its ill-boning pattern. It had been tempered in blood, It has never failed the hand of anyone who has acted it in battle.
Soon I will be done. The time is drawing nigh. Soon I will be done.
Firstborn lamb. Do you all think this is a pious offering? And what have you brought?
I have brought my pizzeria style sausage pepperoni ham with natural juices and bacon pizza. Yay or nay? Why does God always take your sacrifice over mine? It's never fair!
You've heard it said that temperance is good. But I say to you, take up your cross and follow me.
Growing up here at Ambrose, I would deem this experience the Ambrose experience. Living in the Ambrose experience, I have been taught to redeem my time for Christ by constantly seeking what is good and beautiful and true, by hearing scripture every day that I have been in school, from day one of Mrs. Merkel's class to day 251 of my senior year. Thank you.
So what you've seen in that montage is a mix of things. You've seen like our high school choir had an opportunity to be showcased. That was a senior final essay that was presented. But most of it, the kind of bread and butter of the exhorting program are just classrooms. And this is kind of a curricular, it's an outworking of the class. We try to encourage the teachers. It's not an opportunity to create a completely separate set of curricular on the side, a curriculum that should fit into what you're already doing. But it's done well, and again, the response you typically get from the grandparent or the parent sitting in the back, which, by the way, we all know, people don't show up unless their kids are in it. So you have this huge outpouring of all the second grade parents show up and the grandparents. And we realize this is an amazing captive audience, and they're leaving. That may be one of the only major touch points the whole year was they got to see their child on the stage doing this. And how do we do it? Do we do it well? I know in Atlanta we did. We really only use this kind of format twice a year at a grandparents' day or at a, we call it fine arts day at the end of the year. And that was fine. It had the same effect. But by doing this twice a month across multiple grade levels, you have the opportunity to have even more points of excellence along the way. Let me move on to another example. Another best practice is our traditional Christmas concert. Years ago, the Ambrose School, like probably like most schools, had a Christmas program of some sorts. And it was the type of thing that was It was not always well received. It was kind of done okay to fair, and parents would come in and they'd watch their kids, and then when their kids were done, they'd kind of sneak out the back because they didn't really have to endure the other kids on the stage, and it took 5 minutes between scene changes, et cetera, et cetera. And so David Goodwin and the team said, you know what, let's do what Jim Collins calls a big, hairy, audacious goal. Let's come up, could we create at our little Ambrose school when it was small such an amazing Christmas program that the general public would actually want to come and see it, that we could televise it, that it would be so spectacular that we would be known around the Treasure Valley where we live as the school that actually still does traditional Christmas music. There's no dancing elves, there's no Santa. It's actually Handel's Messiah and the beauty of great music. And we said, let's do it. And so this formula kind of came into play of reaching this big goal. And we within 5 years, we had actually about a third of the people at a 1,400-seat theater auditorium that we had rented out coming that were just general friends and family and community. And it was a K-12, huge amount of effort, but all on stage. Let me show you an excerpt from it, and then I'll talk a little bit about kind of the how behind we pull it off.
Tonight we have reached back into a rich heritage that extends far beyond the boundaries of our school, state, nation, or even time itself. Tonight we have moved with the current of a millennia of blessings and culture, celebrating the coming of the kingdom of God in a celebration of the birth of that baby king in Bethlehem.
So you get an idea looking at that. You know, I'm sure you're sitting there thinking, there's no way we're doing that. Have you seen our little school auditorium? I promise you, back in the day, it was very modest. But what it was a grand vision for doing something of such excellence. And so how do we pull it off? Well, we had to find a key musician or two who visionally connected with it. Again, wanted traditional Christmas music at the highest level. We created a team. We have a program manager. We have a guy who's great with kids. He's also an engineer, so he could figure out how to get them on the stage and off the stage quickly. It had to be done with excellence, no downtime. We have an event coordinator, someone who could think about the details, like how do you make it look pretty? I know, go to Costco and buy poinsettias for $40 and then resell them afterwards to the parents. It doesn't even cost you anything. You make this beautiful set. So we got really creative in saying we've got to make it so excellent that people will start telling their friends about it. And so 15 years later, here we are. With a Christmas concert that next year, we're very excited about it. We're actually moving locations to what is the biggest venue in all of the Boise area, the Brandt Center. This is where I think Disney has got some Christmas production before us, and then we come in the next day, which is kind of funny to me. But we are, and it's televised, 4 showings, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day. And people are coming because they know, even if they're pagans out there, they know it's beautiful and they want something excellent for Christmas. So aim big and aim excellent. And it is possible to do these things that are truly inspiring. Another example, another best practice I would give you is mock trial. Who's heard of mock trial? Anybody familiar with mock trial? Okay. Trial advocacy, as it's called in some places, or officially called. A lot of schools do debate. We did debate early on, and then we realized that debate really is not in perfect alignment with a classical rhetoric program. Debate, as it tends to be executed in the modern world, is more of a fact-throwing contest. Kids go out and they pick the topic and they get the flashcards and then they figure how aggressively they can throw ideas back and forth. Mock trial is this beautiful mix of skills of rhetoric and drama and logic. It's basically students taking on the role of attorneys and witnesses. So teams of two, we have 2 teams, 6 to 9 members each in these roles. In Idaho, it's pretty intense competition. Every year for about 7 years, the Ambrose School, we lost to the Logos School. It was rather intense for us. But 2 years ago, the Phoenix rose from the ashes somehow, and we actually won state. But then we lost again last year. But that's okay. It was. But in all seriousness, it's you know, multiple schools around the state, and then these 2 little classical schools every year rise to the occasion. It is an amazing event. Let me show you a video that kind of gives you a feel for what the mock trial program looks like.
The court will now hear the case of the city of Twin Falls versus Yancey Yolo Olson.
Olson agrees that in conducting the jump, he will comply with all federal, state, county, and municipal laws. The permit that we gave Olson as part of this event contract limited him to 5,000 attendees in the area. There were clearly more than that.
Mr. Malone was the one in charge of providing the security for you, isn't that right?
Yes, the security guys all look super professional. It's actually kind of cool.
So you thought he was great and really professional.
Mm-hmm.
Now, isn't it true that you say security is provided by a wannabe cop who was fired from his real job? Mr. German, you just stated that you were never told a limit, right?
Yes, I never heard that when I spoke to
Tracy. But isn't it true that earlier you testified that Mr. German informed you would be selling 5,000 tickets to the event?
That is the number of tickets that are going to be sold, yes.
So Mr. German informed you of that?
Yes, of the number of tickets.
No further questions, Your Honor. Thank you.
So how do you do a mock trial program? First of all, again, these are things I'm mentioning because they're doable by all of our schools. This does not take a huge budget. It's not complicated. It does take a teacher with a systematic and rhetorical skill training, which hopefully is not hard to find in a classical Christian environment. An attorney is helpful to help advise on and some trial experience is helpful. But the great news is that there is actually a starter kit that the Georgia State Mock Trial Program has. You can contact your state bar association to find out more about it. But here's the reason it's a point of excellence. In the scheme of things, it's not complicated to get it up and running. The wonderful thing is because we are the classical Christian folks that we are, and we are excellent at logic and rhetoric, we tend to do really well. And before you know it, your little scrappy classical Christian school that will never stand a chance playing state football, you are now the state champions of the mock trial program. And it garners interest on the part of the press and other schools, and it bodes very well for your program and what you're doing. And it's a very compelling point of interest. So it'll take about 3 or 4 years before you see much success. Again, please don't look at this and go, well, you guys just had it all figured out. If you could go back in time and see our mock trial program the first couple of years, it was rather embarrassing by today's standards for sure. But we pushed forward. It took 3 or 4 years before we were even slightly competitive. And I just encourage you. That's a great example of an opportunity. If we have time, I'll go back. I'm sure I'm generating some questions, but I do want to get through these very specific examples. Another one would be speech meet. Anybody do a speech meet program at your school? Speech meet? A lot of schools do. Absolutely encourage you in speech meet. Like everything else I'm sharing, we went from kind of speech meet version 1.0 to speech meet probably 5.0. And I think we're finally starting to figure out not only how to create an event that is excellent just in terms of what the students experience, but it's something that we now draw people who will come in, grandparents, parents, and others, and say, wow, I have trouble remembering my phone number, and you just memorized the entire Gettysburg Address. That is unbelievable. How did you do that? Well, everyone in first through sixth grade is required to participate. We have 3 to 4 categories of speeches that the students can pick from. We encourage excellent poetry, prose, and other narrative. And we do 3 rounds. So round 1 is in the classroom. It's with the teacher. The teacher will have a couple practice rounds, and then there will be trained judges, which I'll talk more about, parent judges that will come in and score in the classroom. And then those who are superiors move to 2nd round, and I'll explain this again in a second. And then the superiors are judged, and then those that are the top or the superior then go to our exordium, which ends up being one of the most attended exordiums of the whole school year, kind of the top 8 speech meet finalists are in there presenting, and it's truly remarkable. Let me show you the video to give you an idea of what speech meet looks like for us.
Since 2006, our community has been building a tradition of excellence in oration through this exciting day of competition. Students, parents, and faculty look forward to the day of the speech meet with great anticipation each year.
An excerpt from The Two Towers by J.R.R. Tolkien. Sam was left alone, wearily, as the evening of the nameless land fell upon the place of battle. He called back to his master. "Master! Dear master!" he said. But Frodo did not speak. As he'd run forward, eager, rejoicing to be free, Shelob, with a hideous speed, had come behind him, and with one swift stroke, had stung him in the neck.
Tom contemplated the boy a bit, and then said, "What do you call work?"
"Why, ain't that work?"
Tom resumed his whitewashing and answered carelessly, "Well, maybe it is, and maybe it ain't. All I know is it suits Tom Sawyer."
So, jumped out of it. So speech. Oh,
come now! You don't mean to.
Tom Sawyer won't stop. Okay. So let me give you a couple of how do you pull this off. Again, I would say we learned through lots of bumps and bruises, you got to do this one very, very well. Because anytime you're judging, it garners all kinds of wonderful parent phone calls. So we figured out that we really need to staff. So we have a team with a lead administrator. Our lower school dean is kind of overseeing this program. You have an event coordinator, and you have some parents that are involved. Pastors are actually a great opportunity to plug them in. Very clear categories again: poetry, literary prose, Bible, fable, folklore. You develop a rubric. There's a very clear structure behind all of this. You have 10 to 15 judges that are trained to go into the classrooms and critique, and we actually have judges training that they go through, so there's no question what we're looking for. And then we set up a schedule on speech meet day with 2 to 3 judges plus a teacher in every room to hear those speeches. And I'll give you my email if you want more of this detail. I know I'm going very fast. I'll be glad to share with you any of this. Again, the critiquing of it comes down to judging superior, excellent, good, and fair. We don't have poor. Again, that doesn't fly well with parents. Poor is never good. But fair you can kind of work with. Excellence is, and superior. Superior then advances to the next round. So then a week of the classroom round for round 2 is when the superiors go head-to-head with the judges, who must pick 2 students from each of those 4 categories so that the final superiors, again, end up in the large exordium final round. But again, this is an example. It's a point of excellence, because when you walk out of our exordium and you've heard these 8 students, you think to yourself, there is hope. There is good news in our midst that these students are not only remembering all of this, but they're doing it winsomely and confidently, and it's a gift to them. One more point of excellence is our fifth grade Shakespeare play. I got to tell a story. When I went out to the Ambrose School for the first time, David Goodwin and I were friends, invited me out. I had no idea of ever moving to Idaho or the Ambrose School. But the second day we were there, David said, "Hey, guess what? Tonight is our fifth grade Shakespeare play, and I'm so glad you're going to get to see it." And I'm thinking to myself, if you really want to know what I'm thinking right now, it is not positive. I'm thinking, I will be polite and watch your fifth grade play, but I don't know anybody at the play, and I'm sure it's great, but I'm sure it will be somewhat painful. I could not have been more wrong. I've had the privilege of studying at the Royal Shakespeare Company in Stratford-upon-Avon, and I will tell you, I would rather watch this fifth grade play or any of them over, I don't know about over, but it was right there, high quality. Why? Because what began back in 2002 is just an exercise for fifth grade teachers to figure out, how do we do Shakespeare well? Let's maybe put it in the form of a drama. And then we realized that not only is it a way to teach rhetoric skills and self-discipline, but fifth grade is the ideal year. Because fifth grade, they're old enough to cognitively understand, but they're not into the hormonal, awkward middle school years where they're not going to give of their very best. So they are just unleashing themselves on the stage. And they're kind of quirky, too. It's funny to watch Romeo and Juliet try to hold hands, and they don't really know what they're supposed to be doing. So there's a little bit of that going on. But it is really beautiful, and it's the highlight of our year. Again, we have people that come to our school that are just friends of the school, even if they don't have kids in it, because they want to see this program. So let me give you a feel of what the Shakespeare play looks like here in this little video. That we can show. But the idea, again, is I want to keep encouraging you. You're looking at that going, we don't have all those resources. Our first couple of years, very, very modest props, very modest clothing and outfits. But we take classroom time. Let me just quickly mention, I mean, it's definitely something that for about 4 weeks leading up to it, there's about, you know, an hour and a half of time that's taken out of the day's curriculum. But it's a huge part, ultimately, of educating and encouraging the children. So I want to challenge you. Think about a point of excellence with a Shakespeare play in fifth grade. The last one I'll mention is the hymn of the month. Just real simple. This is the idea. We all, as a community, memorize one of the great hymns every month. I'm sure you do something similar. But we started a tradition a number of years ago of having, on the last Friday of the month, everyone gather in our hallways. And it's packed. We're talking over 500 K-12s packed into the hallway, up in the balcony, and the crevices, and every which way. And then we sing this wonderful hymn of the month together, trying to harmonize where we can. But it is a soul-inspiring moment when you hear all these voices lifting up these great hymns of the Lord. And then we end with a doxology. We literally have people in the community that are not even affiliated with the school that will come by just because they need sort of their soul inspiration fix or whatever they want to call it, because it's so beautiful. But that's a touch point where people leave and say, that is something that is good in the world today. And for parents, that's why I picked this particular school. It's an incredibly encouraging thing. Real quickly, I want to mention, this is a little bit breaking some of the rules of my points of excellence, but I can't emphasize enough classroom decor. This is one of those things that we spend so much time working out points of excellence and philosophies, and then we sometimes shoot ourselves in the foot with simple things like just making sure there's beauty even in our classrooms. And that can take a number of forms. Obviously, we're different than the typical kind of public school. We are not into primary colors. In fact, the aesthetic of the classroom really should come from a more cultured affections of an adult looking at it. Let's take away the picture of the cat hanging on the rope saying, out, you know, hang in there or whatever it may be. We don't need that in the classroom. We want beautiful things. I know in Atlanta, we were pretty prescriptive. You had to have a black border around the bulletin boards that had to have great art. The good news is you can get beautiful artwork that's not copyrighted for, you know, very, very inexpensively. Make sure your room looks beautiful. And then once you've got that accomplished, encourage the teachers to keep it that way. How often we walk in the room, you've got beautiful artwork, and then there's yesterday's lunches on the table in front or stacks of whatever in the corner. Our souls will rise when we see these beautiful things. So don't miss out on that opportunity to keep the rooms beautiful and clean. And then just last couple minutes here. I would say showcasing points of excellence. We're thinking a lot right now about how do we not only create a moment in time, like a speech made at an exordium that is wonderful if you're sitting there, but how do we take that out, breaking kind of time and space barriers? For Ambrose this year, one thing we did that started out little that became very big was we started live streaming a lot of our events. So we actually have, it's not that complicated, it's not that expensive, but we'll take that exordium, that speech made exordium, and we will video it and then shoot it up on the internet live, and now we have grandparents all around the country that are watching this. And so whereas in the past the grandparents' touch point might have been the annual fund letter at the end of the year and maybe some little token thing we sent out around Grandparents' Day, they feel like they're part of the community, and they too are being inspired to say, wow, I can't believe what you guys are doing. That reminds me of what I used to have, or whatever the comment might be. It's a way of exporting these things using video. Newsletters, again, we've done it for years, but are you highlighting what we call insights or glimpses where we're taking something done excellently and showcasing it in a way that people can appreciate, even if they're not there? And then definitely inviting people, and I could talk more about this, but anytime you have something that's even remotely a point of excellence, get people on property to come and see it. And that definitely is an inspiration, even for our teachers. If your grammar school teachers go, help them to come and see what's going on in the upper school. So in conclusion, parents and visitors experience excellence that they don't see anywhere else. It is unique and a gift that we have things that are true, good, and beautiful. So let's just think about, as you leave, think about this. What are you already doing that you could refine a bit to make even more defined as a point of excellence? And what are some things that you would think, there's no way we can pull that off? But set it as a five-year goal. We want to do something like what Ambrose did with the Christmas program. And just pray for resources and the people. And I guarantee you people will come into your community and go, thank you for being the shining light of truth, goodness, and beauty. My email is in the materials you've got. I'll be glad to send you any information. We're short on time. I'm going to kind of close this out right now. But stop and ask me any questions. Thank you very much for your time.